Some 18 years ago, there was a feast there. There was a feast right there, not in that building, but right there in that city. But it wasn't very spiritual. I talked to people that were there. And, you know, during that feast, there was an earthquake. And the people I know, their motel, they were like on the seventh floor, it opened up. And they had to jump across the crack to get to the stairs, and they could see all the way to the ground. And as she told me, she said, after Mr. So-and-so, after he spoke every time, there was tremors. And so they didn't go to the services very often. And you know, the sad thing is, after that feast, many people never went to the feast again. People I knew there never went to a feast again. They felt like that, hey, it's over. You know, and later, after it was apparent that there was heresy being preached, as one person told me, he said, you know, we always went to church. We did what the church said. And now this has happened. He said, if God doesn't care, neither do I. As far as I know, persons never went to church again, anywhere. And so that was quite a change from that. But things, I know we're always shocked when something like that happens. But God, in His Word, gives us warning about what can happen in this world. You know, even in Luke chapter 2, if you heard the Bible study a few weeks back from Cincinnati, mentioned it was on Simeon and Anna. But the old man Simeon, that would be in Luke chapter 2, verse 34. I could turn there rather than just talk about it. But Luke chapter 2, right at the beginning. Here, Jesus' family's bringing him to be circumcised. Well, we feel like that Christ was born right in the fall. So this could have been, they're bringing him to be circumcised during the Feast of Tabernacles. There's a lot of people there. There's scribes, Pharisees, priests. But it seems like only two people recognized who the baby was. Of course, that had been Simeon and Anna. But there in verse 34, I believe I want to start with 34. Then Simeon blessed them and said to Mary, his mother, behold, this child is destined for fall and rising of many in Israel. This child's destined for fall and for rising of many in Israel, and for a sign which will be spoken against. You know, this, Jesus gave them a sign. What was his sign? That he was the Messiah? 3 days, 3 nights in the grave. Of course, that's definitely spoken against, and whether for sure if that's what Simeon spoke of, I don't know. But then he said, and continued on, yes, and a sword will pierce through your own soul also. Now, Mary would witness her firstborn son being crucified. You know, God is up front with us when we're called. He doesn't paint a rosy picture. Hey, if you just join me, everything's going to be great. You're going to have a great life in this world. And just vote for me, because I'm going to give you everything you need. No, he doesn't do that. In Psalms 42, I won't turn there, in verse 10, in the Old King James, it says, as with a sword in my bones, my enemy reproaches me. And it's like a question. And then it says, where is your God? And you know, people at that time, it's like they said, where is my God? Where was He? Does He care? Are we of any value to our God? Or are we just here like pawns on a chessboard? You know, two spirit beings moving us about. And we're really not that much value. I'm going to go to Matthew chapter 10, verse 5. We'll start, I believe, Matthew chapter 10. Jesus is sending His disciples out. He's sending them out by two. And this chapter is preparing them for what they might be facing. Let's see, in verse 5 it says, these 12 Jesus sent out and commanded them, saying, do not go in the way of the Gentiles and do not enter a city of the Samaritans, but rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. To the lost sheep. And He begins to prepare them. He's sending them out. Then He goes on through all these verses, like He was preparing His servants for what this world is capable of doing. We're not saying that every individual is maybe going to suffer through everything that may be mentioned here. But certainly spiritually, if not physically, that very well could happen. God does not hide from us for what our calling may involve. We just need to understand that He does not hide from us and give us a whitewash on how great it is if you will just join me. He doesn't have that kind of sales pitch. God does not hide what our calling may involve. Let's look at verse 16. I don't think I skipped a page. Let's look at verse 16. God says that we are very valuable to Him. Brethren, I did skip a page, but it's not important because I got several pages. So, I mean, what's one more? You know, if God did not love us, then what would happen to mankind? Mankind would just cease to exist. We just would not even exist if God did not love us. If God did not love, mankind would end. We would be like the dinosaurs. We'd just be some bones in strata. And there would be no archaeologists to dig us up and wonder, well, now what that civilization was like. Because there wouldn't be any. There just wouldn't be any. In Mark chapter 13... Mark chapter 13. In verse 20. I'll begin in verse 19. For in those days there will be tribulations such as has not been from the beginning of creation which God created until this time nor ever shall be. God predicts that we've had a lot of trouble on this earth, but there's going to be really increased trouble as time goes on. In verse 20, and unless the Lord had shortened those days, no flesh would be saved. Said if He did not cut short the days that are still ahead, there just would not be any flesh saved. Say, we would be extinct as the dinosaurs and all the other species that have come and gone. Unless the Lord had shortened those days, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, whom He chose, He shortened those days. God shortened the days for that elect. That means you people here in Oklahoma City, God will shorten those days. Just right here. Maybe if that's all there was in the world, was this little group, He would shorten those days for the elect's sake. For our sake. Brethren, do you feel valuable to God? Do you really feel valuable? Or maybe at times you may feel, oh my, woe is me. Does God really care? As that person told me, God doesn't care, so why should I? No, brethren, you need to know that you are very valuable to God. And to realize that and to think about it. God is open, and He tells us when He opens our mind what might we have to face in this world, because this is not His world. And He gives us some worst-case scenarios that could happen. Every single person is not going to maybe face that. As Simeon had told Mary, you know, that a sword will pierce through your own soul also. No. So let's look here. Continue on in Matthew chapter 10 and verse 16. God does not hide what our calling may involve. He says, "Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves." He sends us out as sheep. Well, what's a sheep like? Our neighbor boy, two or three houses down, he's got two sheep. He's in FFA, him and his friend. Well, each one has one sheep. And they're going to care for these sheep and look after them and show them. But there's an article called Sheep 201, Beginner's Guide to Raising Sheep. It says some of the things that sheep are. The article says, they desire to stay together for protection. Think about it. Does a sheep have much protection? You know, a cow, they can bully their way. The cow bully? No, the bull bullies. Okay. Little play on words there. Unintentional. But a sheep, what does a sheep do? They desire to stay together for protection. If when I have my dog, if those sheep see it, they get together and they go in the barn just to see the dog. I don't think they've ever been attacked by a dog, but they know that there's danger. They run from what frightens them. Banding together is their only protection. Sheep, and when a flock, they keep trying to move to the center. They don't want to be a straggler on the outside. They want to be close in with the sheep. They follow. I saw an article, I'm trying to remember where this was. I can't right now. But this article was telling about the death of 400 sheep in Turkey. 400 sheep. This was in 2006 in eastern Turkey. Here's this deep ravine, 15 meters, 40, 50 feet deep. One of the sheep, for whatever reason, goes off. And you know what? The rest of them followed. 400 crashed to their death. They weren't following the shepherd. They were following another sheep. That was not the thing to do. The shepherd would not have led them to a deep crevice in the ground. I say, if we're like sheep, then don't follow another sheep. Be sure you're following the shepherd. He said, He's sending us out as sheep. And be sure you're following the shepherd. In John 10:27, Jesus said, "My sheep hear my voice." Maybe I should turn there. John chapter 10. Verse 27. My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. See, the sheep learn the shepherd, and they follow. They will follow the shepherd. They learn to trust the shepherd. And anciently, and maybe even to this day, the sheep, the shepherd, when he pens them up at the sheep gate, he would even sleep by the gate. So nothing, he'd know if something went in or out. He said, verse 20 said, my sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. Not another sheep, but they follow Jesus Christ. Going on back to Matthew 10 and verse 16. I'll be spending most of my time in Matthew 10. He said, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Well, you know what wolves do to sheep? I've had an article here. But those sheep see my dog, and they recognize like a wolf. He said, I send you out as sheep among wolves. I seen here in September 29th this year in the Seattle Times, wolf attack kills sheep and dogs in northeast Oregon. You know, you have the Great Pyrenees dogs that are raised with the sheep, and they're the protector of the sheep. You know, the shepherds on the other side or whatever at night. Two recent wolf attacks have killed 8 sheep and 2 livestock protection dogs. They're in Amalthea County. See, the dogs run out to face the wolf pack, and the Great Pyrenees with the wolf pack, that's too much. One man told me, well, I don't remember if he was at the feast last year in the Northeast, that he had complained and maybe sent articles, these wolves are killing my sheep, and the government keeps importing these timber wolves and turning them loose. People, oh, hum. But then when he was telling them how they tore the sheepdogs up, then people were concerned because they'll tear those dogs to pieces. That's a wolf. And he said, you're like sheep among wolves. If you're a sheep and there's wolves, you need to be close to the shepherd, right? Because he's going to protect you. Another article I saw in Chinese news, I think it came through the Telegraph in the United Kingdom, in the UK, and this was in August of this year. Wolves attacked Chinese villagers defending their sheep. 6 people were injured in China when a pack of wolves made a rare attack on a village near the Mongolian border. They woke up, they heard the noise, they ran out, and 6 of them went to the hospital, and the wolves killed some sheep. So they made enough noise that several families got up and went out to see. Well, wolves have their value, but when it comes to sheep, boy, they are, as they say, murder for sheep. And Jesus said that he was sending his disciples out as sheep among wolves. He says, therefore, be wise as serpents. Be as wise as a serpent. You think about a serpent. He's slithering along in the grass. He's not strutting about drawing attention. He's not standing on the corner on Saturday at Walmart, you know, telling people, this is a God's Sabbath. What are you doing shopping? You're sinning. You're going to whatever, Gehenna, hell. You know, we don't do it that way. We preach to the general public. Hopefully we try to be as tactful and yet get the message apart. He said, be as wise as a serpent. In other words, we don't cast our pearls before swine, to those who reject the truth. If someone's rejecting the truth, we're not obligated to argue with them and fight with them. That's different than if any man asks you, be ready to give an answer. If people ask for us, we go and we be ready to give an answer. No, we're among wolves in this world, and we need to follow the shepherd. The shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. You know, Jesus said, greater love has no man than to lay down his life for his brother. We know that Jesus Christ is willing to lay down his life for us. And also in Romans chapter 12, verse 1, it says, greater love has no man than to lay down his life for his brother. No, God loves his people, and he loves this world, lest this world would just come to an end. Christ is telling us up front what can happen in this world. I don't think he's saying that every one of you, all of these things are going to happen to physically. He's saying what this world is capable of when it becomes embittered through the evil spirits of this world. No, he's saying, be wise as servants or serpents, but also be harmless as doves. I think most of you have seen a dove. You know, even its beak is not something that's designed for attack and killing. You know, the little beak, you pick up stuff, then look at a hawk or a blue jay at the difference. Be harmless as doves. I was sitting there at the feast. We could sit out by the beach under these little tents, and there was food there. And here the doves would come, you know, looking for some bread, and they would be hopping about. And then when the grackles came, I mean, there was no competition. I mean, the grackle would march in there, and the little dove would have to just kind of flutter and then try to get to another place. You know, harmless as a dove. You know, if you haven't watched a dove, well, take time to watch a dove. Wise as a serpent, but harmless as a dove. He's telling us that that's what we need to do. Continuing, verse 17 says, beware of men. Beware of men. For they will deliver you up to the councils and scourge you in their synagogues. Men are capable of doing that. And I think that maybe not physically, but I know many of you have been scourged by relatives, by the world, by other employees. I mean, it can happen, and it does happen. He said that men will scourge you. And I will turn back to Matthew chapter 7. So we need to be careful. We want to be ready to give an answer for the faith that's in us. In Matthew chapter 7, verse 6, do not give what is holy to the dogs, nor cast your pearls before swine. A swine, a pearl has no value to a swine. If we're dealing with another person, that God's truth and his way has no value, then should we just cast our pearls there before swine? Lest they trample them under feet. Whereas they just trample the truth, make fun of it, or ridicule it, and then what? And turn and tear you to pieces. Yes, brethren, some of these Bible thumpers can tear you to pieces with the Scriptures. You know, at times, many times they know a lot of Scriptures and can quote them. And they can quote them in a way of distortion because that's who their father has taught them, even though they were unaware of it. Those rejecting the truth is what we're talking about here. Those uninterested, it's nothing to them. You know, but the kingdom of God is like a precious pearl. And it should be precious to us. In Matthew chapter 13, it's close by, we'll turn there in verse 45. Says again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant seeking beautiful pearls, who when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. Is this not what God is telling us here in Matthew 10? That we're willing to sell, we're willing to sell out ourselves for that pearl and for that truth that God's giving us. And he's telling us here, this maybe is what it's going to cost you. Maybe this is what it's costing. So we treasure that. And we rely on that. No, they may scourge you. This is the attitude that they have if they had the power to do it. And you probably have met people, if they had the power to do it, they would scourge you. So they'll do it verbally or any other way, maybe through your job, through your family, they will scourge you, is what they're saying. And, you know, we don't want to just get into some kind of a dog and cat fight with someone over religion. You need to recognize, is there any interest here, or are they just going to trample on the truth? In verse 19, but when they deliver you up, do not worry about how or what you should speak, for it will be given to you in that hour what you should speak. In other words, we may have it all planned out. When this comes to me, I know how I'm going to answer. I've got it all figured out. But you know, we may know the Scriptures, and we may know what our answer is, but if we don't have God's inspiration, it's just not going to fly. It's not going to sound right. You know, have you ever been confronted that way? And, oh man. And then after the fact, why didn't I say this? Or why wasn't my answer better? If I could have just said this. No, God's inspiration has to be there. Or we're just floundering about. You know, in verse 19, but when they deliver you up, do not worry about how what you should speak, for it will be given to you. We've got to stay close to God, that He will give us what we need, the inspiration and the guidance. And we have to rely on God to do that. He says, verse 20, for it is not you who speak, but the Spirit of your Father who speaks in you. We have to be relying and have God's Spirit, or we're just not going to be able to answer the right thing. Now, brother will deliver you to death, and a father his child, and children will rise up against parents and cause them to be put to death. So here he's moving to the end time. But there's been other times when this has happened. If you read some about the different inquisitions that have happened, people under pressure will do this. Mr. Segley, as we were talking to him, when he was 17 years old, he decided to keep the Sabbath. And he went to church, and then it came time again. And his father said, if you go to that church, you cannot come home. I mean, he's 17. You're going to make the choice. If you go to that church, you're not coming home. So what people are capable of when it comes to God's truth. They can be very mean, even to someone they love. They can be very mean and unthoughtful. And God's telling us right up front that, you know, you'll be hated for my name's sake. In verse 22, but he who endures to the end will be saved. The fact is that we may be hated for living God's way. Doesn't mean that the hate's going to endure forever, because Mr. Segley's father later relented. Because, I mean, he had his clothes packed. He had to leave. You know, but God had mercy on him and changed that attitude. So God can change that attitude. But he said, it's possible that you can be hated for my name's sake. But he who endures to the end will be saved. So if he would have caved in and said, well, I can't go to church, would he have been there this year? I don't know. As we heard at the feast, then that was plan A. Then plan B would have set in, because God's will is going to be done. So then plan B, I don't know what might have been involved to get Mr. Segley into the church. But God has a plan. And if we keep rejecting his plan, then we keep moving plan A, B, C, D. And it probably gets harder as each plan goes by. So we react to the plan A and move on in obeying God. I mean, Jonah, he didn't take plan A, right? He was supposed to go to Nineveh. He decided that he took plan B. You know, it could have been a lot easier. Swallowed by a fish, you know, that had to be stressful. That, you know, that was just had to be stressful. And was he not thinking, why didn't I just go to Nineveh? Well, he thought they wouldn't listen. He'd be a fool. So he took plan B. But he went to Nineveh. And when God calls, you can either respond now or you can take plan B and go right on until you decide that, hey, I think it's better if I just go ahead and do what God says now. But be enduring and don't cave in. You know, if we stand faithful, God will bring it to a good end. It doesn't seem like it, but God will bring it to a good end. What does it say in Romans chapter 8? I will turn there. Romans chapter 8, in verse 28. Romans 8:28. God says, and we know that all things work together for good to who? To those who love God. That's who all things work together for good, is those who love God. Even though we're going through a stressful time, Jonah had to go through the belly of a fish to get to where he was supposed to go. Who are called according to his purpose. Yeah. Every person called according to God's purpose for that person. And for that time. And the events that will happen in that person's life. According to his purpose. So God's going to work it out for our good. But we may have some stress. But we got to face the facts too, that the whole world is having stress. Everyone's having stress. This is just a different kind of stress that we have. If you're persecuted for your belief, as I see in verse 23, it says, but when they persecute you in this city, flee to another. He said, if they're persecuting you, flee to another. If somebody's persecuting you for your belief, then leave them alone. And there's no need to keep hammering it. They're not going to listen. You're just bringing persecution. He said, flee to another. For assuredly I say to you, verse 23, you will not have gone through the cities of Israel before the Son of Man comes. We will not have to live through every situation that could come to our life before the Son of Man comes. No, if we endure, then just as he said, you will not cover the cities of Israel, we necessarily will not have to cover every situation that maybe he's going through here. If we endure, God will cut short and deliver us. Remember, God took Enoch. Apparently, Enoch's life was in danger. I might turn to Genesis chapter 5, verse 24. And Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. And we can read more about that in Hebrews chapter 11. Also in Jude, but Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 5. By faith, Enoch was translated. And the Greek word there, as far as I've been able to find out, is transferred to another place. In other words, he was translated so that he did not see death. Apparently, he was on schedule to be killed because of what he was saying and doing, and was not found. He wasn't found. Because God translated him, for before his translation, he had this testimony that he pleased God. That he pleased God. God is going to intervene. If you get into a trial, he's going to intervene, just like with Enoch. In some way, he will intervene. If we'll turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. God's up front what could happen, but he also tells us that he's going to be there. As the shepherd, he's going to be there. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. Now, I've been in some temptations, and I thought, this has got to be the worst that anyone's ever had. But the longer I'm with God's church, I realize, that was no temptation. Look what these people are having to face. I mean, you know, we know Isaiah maybe was sawn. It says he was sawn in two. And I understand that was a form of punishment, put someone in a hollow log and then they would saw it. So I haven't had that. You know, I just thought I had. But see, I wouldn't be able to bear it probably. In every trial, anyway, 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13, no temptation has overtaken you except such as common to man, but God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. You've got to remember that. He's not going to push you or allow you to be pushed more than you're able. But with the temptation, will also make a way of escape that you will be able to bear it. And that word bear it means like on the shoulder, just carrying it. You'll be able to carry it. Because he's going to be there to help us bear that. I know at times our own human nature and our own weakness, we think, I just can't bear this. It's too much. But as we'll see, God will give us the power to bear it. See, in verse 24, back to Matthew chapter 10. Matthew chapter 10, verse 24. A disciple is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. We know what Christ was faced with and the temptations that were put before him. Satan himself. And Satan knows where we are. And he knows that this is his chance. If we're called now, this is Satan's chance to bring us into temptation and to destroy us spiritually. A disciple's not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. Verse 25, it is enough for a disciple that he be like his teacher and a servant like his master. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebub, how much more will they call those of his household? I have actually been told by keeping the Sabbath and God's ways that I am not under grace, that I have fallen from grace. Oh, if you do that, then you're not under grace. You know, that's demonism. That's not God's way. Therefore, in verse 26, do not fear them, for there is nothing covered that will not be revealed, and hidden that will not be known. God will show us what is needed. If it's hidden from us, God will reveal to us how to get through the situation. I mean, if we follow Christ, we could get into similar situations just as Christ was in. And we have the record that we can read about, and hopefully we are, to see how he was treated and how the evil one was always there, because now we're in the flesh. He's no longer in the flesh, but Christ in us. So he's still after Christ, because Christ lives in us. You know, verse 27, whatever I tell you in the dark, speak in the light. And what you hear in the ear, preach on the housetop. What God reveals, we should not be ashamed of. And in doing that, we are to use the wisdom that he's just taught us in the previous verses, how to do that. How not to be ashamed. And how to preach that. And I'm sure the leaders in the church read this and try to comprehend the proper way of preaching the gospel that it be effective. In verse 28, and do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Don't worry so much about the dying flesh. I mean, that's easy for an old man like me to say, okay, you kids, don't worry about it. Just tough it out. You're going to die anyway, okay? You know, I've already spent my days. But the young people haven't spent their days yet. And so that's easy to say, but it's harder. Because when you're young, you're probably never going to die. I never really ever thought of it. Always pictured myself going on for eternity, just my perfect self moving forward. There was this group of people over here that are old, and that's just the way they are. They're old. Yeah, but I'm not old, so I'm just fine. But the fact is, the flesh, if we get over-consumed with protecting and coddling the flesh, it's going to go away. And you say, don't worry so much about it. Because the fact is, we're here today and we're gone tomorrow. It's short. After 71 years, I just realized how short it is. You know, it seemed like it took me forever to get to be to 16 where I could drive. I mean, that was an eternity. And then, man, when I get 18, I'm out of here. You know, couldn't wait for that. 21. And, you know, then it took off like a rocket ship. But I don't know where the time went. But it really speeded up. It really speeded up. So don't worry so much about the flesh. In verse 29 then, I think we're getting to what, after God tells us all the things that this world is capable of handing out. And we're in this world. What did he pray? He said, Father, I pray you don't take them out of the world, but you deliver them. I don't remember just how that's worded. But, you know, you protect and you deliver them from the evil of it. But we're in the world, and we're going to be in it, either till we die or till Christ returns. So in verse 29, no matter how hard we feel like life is treating us, God cares and He will deliver us. Let's look at verse 29. He says, after saying, don't fear man, but fear God, who has the power over life and death for eternity. He says, are not two sparrows sold for a copper coin? And not one of them falls to the ground apart from your Father's will. Can you believe that? The common sparrow. My enemy. I despise the sparrows. They took, you know, they build these nests, any little crevice or crack. I have a birdhouse for my beautiful bluebirds. The sparrows take it over. And I've had to repent of that. I realize God uses a sparrow, a little brown sparrow. He said, hey, God knows when one of those falls. I looked up on the internet the story of the most common bird in the world. It is common all over this world. Wherever man goes, the sparrow goes. He's right there. He's with us. He's been around you all your life, within a few feet, probably, at any given time. There he is. He's chirping. He's lurking. He's going to get in your bird feeder. He's there. But I have noticed about the sparrow, they're very protective of their young. They build nice nests. It's big. They're and they'll try to put it in a protective place and look after their family. You know, the dove, like we're supposed to be, kind of, they build this little old stick nest on a limb, and I don't know how they survive. Wind storms can just blow the eggs away, but, you know, they're harmless. The sparrow knows how to take care of itself. Said in this article, this is from the Smithsonian Institute, so you know it's got to be true, right? The Smithsonian cannot lie. Unless you go there and look at some of the things that they teach. But they do. They have a lot of things. Even if you don't know it, you have probably been surrounded by house sparrows your entire life. It's one of the most common animals in the world. It's found throughout Africa, North America, South America. I don't know any place it's not. House sparrows have been seen feeding on the 80th floor of the Empire State Building. You can't get away from them. Don't try. I mean, they're going to be there. And God says, if one of those falls, He knows. I mean, there are literally billions of them. And they've been spotted breeding nearly 2,000 feet underground in a mine in Yorkshire, England. They're there with us, the sparrow, and He uses the sparrow, something so common that we would just count as nothing. And He says He knows when one falls. He knows when one falls. The first hint of the house sparrow itself, where do you think it would be found? They go back through strata. Oh, here's a house sparrow. This is the first time we found it that anciently. It was found in a cave in Israel. Yeah, that's the first finding so far that they've found. And what? Another thing, in that same cave, there was human bones. If there's humans, there's sparrows. And if one of them falls, God knows it. He knows if one of them falls, he's there and he understands it. Yes. For the common little sparrow. I think that's all I was going to read about the sparrow. Well, I thought this was interesting. You know, Chairman Mao. He could control everything, right? He knew what was best. He's kind of like the North Korean boss man there we have. He knew what's best for his people. He decided that sparrows were a pest, along with mosquitoes and flies. And we're going to get rid of all the sparrows in China. I think this was in 1958. And he organized the whole nation to kill sparrows. They were to go on this certain day and time. They were to bang on pots, make noise, make the birds fly. They poisoned them. They netted them. They estimate, they killed at least 1 billion birds of sparrows. And God knew when one or two falls. And they killed at least 1 billion sparrows right there in China. That would solve their problems. Another pest out of the way. So the process of evolution can proceed forward. We don't need the sparrow. So they did what they did. They killed at least 1 billion sparrows. See what it says. When the sparrows were killed, crop production increased, at least according to some reports, at least initially. But with time, something else happened. You could probably guess what happened over time. Pests of rice and other staple foods erupted in densities never seen before. See, the sparrow said, well, that's a seed eater. We don't need it. But we overlooked, they're also very prolific. I don't know how many young they can raise in a year. They build a nest. If that one goes good, they'll have another one in 2 weeks. The babies eat insects. So they're gathering these insects all the time. You know, the pest of rice and other staple foods erupted in densities never seen before. The crops were mowed down, and partly as a consequence, starvation due to crop failure, 35 million Chinese died. The little sparrow. I had to respect the sparrow. So Chairman Mao had to change his mind, and he did in 1960. He said, okay, quit killing the sparrows, okay? I don't think he apologized. He made a mistake. But he realized maybe they're not so much the pest. They are a pest in many ways, but God knows he uses that little bird that's so common wherever mankind is. He knows, are not two sparrows sold for a copper coin, and not one of them falls to the ground apart from your Father's will. He knows when the sparrows fall. And then in verse 30, but the very hairs of your head are all numbered. The very hairs of your head are all numbered. You know, that's quite a lot. I think, what is it? Somebody, maybe it's a Smithsonian, or maybe, Encyclopedia Britannica, they hired a hair expert. How many hairs on an average person's head? I mean, that varies a lot, I know. But they said at least 100 to 150,000 hairs. And he knows the number? I don't know, but if God calls 100,000 people in this time, what's the math on that? I mean, that's like, 12 billion hairs? He knows about. So I think that God considers us important. I don't know, someone better than me could figure that out, but if there's 100,000 people called, You got 100,000, 150,000 hairs on your head? And he said, he knows. He knows. No matter what you think might happen, you are valuable. You know, there's other people that have thought maybe they were not so valuable. I wanted to turn to Scripture if I could. I didn't be sure to get it right. There was an ancient prophet who maybe felt like you have at times. In 1 Kings chapter 19. 1 Kings chapter 19. In verse 1, now think about this, man. If you read the previous chapter, this is Elijah. And he saw a tremendous miracle happen to the prophets of Baal. He said, let's see who you're going to serve. You want to serve Baal or you want to serve the Eternal? So they all gathered. And you know, they made the sacrifice and poured all the water around it. And the prophets of Baal prayed and screamed and cried, oh Baal, send down and take these sacrifices. Nothing happened. But when Elijah prayed, it says, then the fire of the Eternal in verse 38 on chapter 18. And the fire of the Eternal fell and consumed the burnt sacrifice, the wood and the stones and the dust. And it licked up the water that was in the trench. He witnessed all this. Now when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces. And they said, the Eternal, He is God. And the Eternal, He is God. In verse 40, and Elijah said to them, seize the prophets of Baal. Do not let one of them escape. So they seized them, and Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and executed them there. So here Elijah saw a tremendous miracle. And the prophets of Baal, they should not have been in Israel. Israel was God's country, God's nation. Here a man witnessed this tremendous miracle and the power of God. And then in verse 19, or in chapter 19, verse 1, and Ahab told Jezebel. So if you really want to get something done, tell your wife. And she'll get her done. And so what happened? He told Jezebel all that Elijah had done, also how he executed all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a message to Elijah saying, so let the gods do to me and more also if I do not make your life as one of the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time. Said Elijah, I'm going to kill you. You're going to be dead by tomorrow. He had just witnessed a tremendous miracle and faced the prophets of Baal. In verse 3, and when he saw that he arose and ran for his life. I mean, he didn't run from Ahab. He ran from the woman. He took off like a scared rabbit. Oh, Jezebel. Oh, if you're bringing out the big guns now. Bringing out Jezebel. He ran for his life. Went to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. And in verse 9, and there he went into a cave and spent the night in that place, and behold, the word of the Eternal came to him, and he said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? Words, what are you doing here? So he said, I have been very zealous for the Eternal God of hosts. It reminds me of that person I was telling you about in the beginning. I've always done what God said, and now, as if He doesn't care. I'm through. I don't care. He said, I've been zealous for the eternal God of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant. Imagine the discouragement. They've forsaken, tore down your altars, and killed your prophets. Remember what Jesus said, Matthew 10, could happen with the sword. And he said, I alone am left, and they're trying to kill me. I'm the only one left. And now they're going to kill me. All of God's people are gone. But see, we don't know everything. We only know what's there in front of us in our time of trial or trouble. But God said in verse 18, He said, yet I have reserved 7,000 in Israel, all whose knees have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him. See, that person didn't realize that, hey, there was a lot of people out here, the God's people, that were going to keep the feast again. And they were going to obey God. See, but it didn't look that way to this particular person. And Elijah felt that way. And you wonder, who are these people? This 7,000. Don't you think they had their own story to tell that's not recorded? What they maybe had gone through or had to face as God's people. See, what kind of story would they have to tell? But God said He's reserved 7,000. You know, if you ever felt like Elijah, you know, and say, like this person did, I fought the battle and I lost. You know, I fought and I've lost. I'm through. You know, but God so loved the world, as we know, He even gave His own Son. So, if He didn't love the world, then there would be none of us left. So, for our sake, there is. He's saying, no matter what you think might happen, you are valuable. Elijah was valuable. Enoch was valuable. Yes, they had the trials. And God said, Elijah, what are you doing here? What are you doing here in this condition? You know, when we get like at the end of the rope, God may be thinking, what are you doing here after all you've seen and you understand? No. He said, no matter what you might think happens, you are valuable. In Matthew chapter 23, in verse 37, Jesus said, O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the one who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her. See, well, there's nothing that happens to us that hasn't happened. That doesn't mean we're all going to be killed as a prophet or stoned to death. But this world is capable of doing that. Stone those who are sent to her. How often I wanted to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing. Have you seen a chicken with chicks? I mean, nowadays, all we see is the egg. And the chickens are in, you know, big brooding houses. But when I was young, we had chickens with chicks. And they would go out, clup, 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 clup. And the chicks would be there. And when they gave a certain signal, those chicks would run back to the hen under the wings. Because a hawk maybe was there ready to take a chick. And he said, I wanted to gather you as a chicken would gather her chicks. Well, in one sermon at the feast, a man told the story of during the Depression when there wasn't much food. And his mother fixed biscuits in the morning. She put the flour and the water. And then she just stopped. And she just kind of gazed out the window for a while. And all at once, the chicken cackled. And she said, "Son, go get the egg." You know, a chicken, when it lays an egg, it's like it celebrates. It cackles. And people don't see that or understand it anymore. It's like there's rejoicing. You know, the chicken cackled. He got the egg. She put it in the flour and made the biscuits. You know, the chicken, she waited on that. In Luke chapter 15, we see. In Luke chapter 15. In verse 10. I believe it's verse 10. I'll read verse 9. "And when she had found it, she calls her friends and neighbors together, saying, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found the peace which was lost.'" Verse 10. "Likewise, I say to you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents." One sinner who repents. God knows when the sparrow falls and the whole heavens rejoices at one sinner that repents. I won't turn there, but in Psalms 116, verse 15, it's just short. "It's precious in the sight of the Eternal is the death of His saints." That is precious because they're going to be in His family. That's a precious time. You know, if God didn't love us, we would just perish from the earth. You know, at times we may feel abandoned. You know, we have trials and tests. My wife said, "I don't understand why you're having this trial about the Sabbath. God knows you're going to keep the Sabbath. And, you know, you can't work because of the Sabbath." Well, you know, God hasn't abandoned me. I haven't faced any trial that everybody else hasn't faced, you know, at times. And, you know, 18 years ago there in Puerto Vallarta, for some people it looked like it was the last feast. It was over. Let's go fishing. Let's go back to the good old days, to whatever we've left. God doesn't care. But you know, God does care, and He counts every one of His people valuable. Very valuable. He keeps track of even the hair on your head. He cares. And you know, we should care. We always should count the calling as more valuable than any physical thing. It's more valuable. We know it's more valuable than many sparrows that God keeps track of. You know, we need to count our blessings because it's worth it. Jesus, what did He say in Matthew 11, 29? I should turn there. Matthew 11, 29. He says that, verse 28, "Come to me, all you who are labor and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." When it really gets hard, and before, of course, He says, "Come to me and I'm going to give you rest." Verse 29, "Take my yoke upon you." He says, "Take my yoke upon you." Words, be coupled with Christ. If you have two oxen pulling, they're coupled together with a yoke. And if you're coupled together with Christ, He says, "And learn from me, and I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy." Easy compared to Satan's way. Yeah, it's not just easy all the time, but compared. You know, take a look at this world. This world is not easy. And the people of this world do not have it easy. "For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Because we're yoked together. He says, "Rejoice, for great is your reward in heaven. That'd be Matthew 5:12. We don't need to turn there. For so persecuted the prophets which were before you. So there's always been persecution if you follow God's way in this world. You've got to remember what world we're in. And then God calls us out of us. He says in Luke chapter 6, I would like to turn there in Luke chapter 6, in verse 22, he says, blessed are you when men hate you. That sounds like a tough order. And when they exclude you and revile you and cast out your name as evil. And any of our young people that went through public school and trying to obey God can certainly identify with that. I think as Mr. Dowd mentioned, you know, your hair's not right, your clothes not right. You know, there's too many things not right to be that really popular person with everyone. When they exclude you and revile you and cast out your name as evil for the Son of Man's sake. He says, rejoice in that day and leap for joy. For indeed your reward is great in heaven. For in like manner their fathers did to the prophets. So it's been done before. You know, in verse 35. But love your enemies. Do good. Lend. Hoping for nothing in return. You know, everyone would invite my neighbor and then he's going to invite me. You know, I scratch his back, he scratches mine. And your reward will be great. You will be sons of the highest. For he is kind to the unthankful and evil. He's kind to the unthankful and evil. So we cannot hold those grudges because we're mistreated for the truth. Therefore, be merciful, just as your Father also is merciful. God allows trials and tells us up front that there's going to be trials at times. But also will see us through every trial. You know, you are more valuable than many sparrows, as Christ said. So, brethren, be sure that you're just not following another sheep. Be sure you're following the shepherd.